Shantaswami Niti Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Bhavana Pachani Vasisamani Paskajani Satana.
Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Taparkamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavascha Sri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Ravinatam Dutam Samsachima Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Purijana Sahita Krishna Jaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Vamsa Vinalavitam Sri Vishakam Vitascha
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
pieces. So I think that these children are feeling pretty aggrieved.
They.
Sarve.
All.
Pranjayalaha.
With folded hands.
Nripaha. O king. Kim.
Why?
Naha.
Us.
Indra.
O Indra.
Jighamsasi. Do you want to kill? Brataraha, brothers, Marutaha, Maruts, Tava,
your
translation. O king, being very much aggrieved, they pleaded to Indra with folded hands, saying, "Dear Indra, we are the Maruts, your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us?" We're seeing here the extent of selfishness. And on both the part of Diti and Indra, both of them, they are related. Diti is Indra's aunt or Indra's stepmother. So the children, they have the same father. They would be brothers. And yet she wants to kill Indra because of the death of her sons, and he wants to destroy his half-brothers. saying, "We're your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us?" This is the extent. We think that at least within the family, we're going to have security. We're going to have loyalty. At least there. We expect that from our parents and our brothers and sisters, our immediate family, that we're going to have shelter. But we find that even the family, half of all murders take place within the family. Half. Between family members. And here we see that even such higher beings as Diti, Diti is a very exalted person. She's not an ordinary person. She's a demigoddess. Her husband is the father of God. And Indra is certainly not an ordinary person. And even on that level, they're willing to kill another family member for their own purposes. So they're pleading with him, "Why are you trying to kill us? We're your brothers." Text 64. When Indra saw that actually they were his devoted followers, he said to them, "If you are all my brothers, you have nothing more to fear from me." So here we see Indra's mentality. It's not really that he loves them as his brothers. He's saying, "Okay, I'm willing to kill you if you're my enemy, and I'll save you if you're my friends." Brothers, not brothers. Right? This is, the materialistic mentality. Now, I'm going to assume that none of us in this room have ever killed anybody, but that we still tend to have this materialistic mentality, that if somebody is my friend, then I'll help them out, and if someone's my enemy, then I'll do whatever's necessary to harm them, to get them out of my way. Now, if you're really demoniac, you want to harm them just for the sake of harming them. But at the bottom line, we at least want to remove them as an obstacle in our life. And whatever we have to do, if we have to ruin their reputation, if we have to criticize them, backbite them, you know, take away their sustenance, whatever we need to do to get them out of our way. And this is the materialistic mentality. You're my friend, I'll facilitate you. You're impeding my sense gratification, I will get you out of my way. And of course we want to do this with objects and circumstances, but we'll even do it with living entities, all the way up to family members. As I said, I just was dealing with a situation like this with the family. Text 65. Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King Parikshit, you were burned by the Brahmastra of Asvatthama, but when Lord Krishna entered the womb of your mother, you were saved. Similarly, although the one embryo was cut into 49 pieces by the thunderbolt of Indra, they were all saved by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So this is a very nice preaching, teaching technique. If you're presenting something extraordinary, you think if the baby's cut into 49 pieces, it will die, which was, of course, Indra's intention. But here he's saying, Sukadeva Goswami saying, "You didn't die. You were attacked in the womb by a Brahmastra. You didn't die. So how can we, it's not that difficult to understand that this baby didn't die also. Mare Krishna Rake K, Rake Krishna Mare K. Krishna wants to kill you, no one can save you. And Krishna wants to save you, no one can kill you. So we waste a lot of time worrying about whether or not we're going to be okay, and whether or not we're going to have this, and whether or not we're, Gregory, we're just talking about whether or not we're going to have this or that or the other thing. But Rake Krishna Mare K, Mare Krishna Rake K. If Krishna wants to protect me, nobody can hurt me. And if Krishna wants to hurt me, nobody can protect me, including myself. So why not just let Krishna deal with that? I do my duty, I do my service, and you know, if Krishna wants to put me on the front line and I'm one of the soldiers that gets killed before the battle even starts, well, what can be done? And if Krishna wants me to be the one that plants the flag at the top of the hill and they make a statue of my honor for 100 years and crows pass poop on me, then, you know, that's okay too. Whatever, whichever way Krishna wants to play it, then that's the mood of the devotees. And if Krishna wants to save you, nobody can kill you. Nobody can kill you. But that's up to Krishna. The devotee doesn't think, well, I'm going to just, you know, go. Krishna will definitely protect me. He's thinking, Krishna will protect me. I'm relying on Krishna for his protection. Whatever he wants to do with me. Marabhi, Rakabhi, Yavichatama. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's your adhikar. That's your right. We ask for seva adhikara diye, karanija dasi. We're praying to Tulsi every day. I want the right of service. That's the right. We can demand one right. I demand the right to serve you. I'm your part and parcel. We want that adhikar. But Krishna has the adhikar. Marobi rakobi. You can sell me. You can save me. You can protect me. You can put me sampare vipare. You can put me in distress. You can put me in happiness. But we shouldn't be surprised that Krishna can save somebody in an extraordinary situation, if he so chooses. Even if you're cut into 49 pieces, he can save you if he chooses. And he can create 49 babies out of that 49 pieces. If one worships, this is text 6667, if one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, now this is an incredible verse. This verse should give us great hope. If one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshiped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength in spiritual life, the 49 Marus were born. How then is it wonderful that the Marus, although born from the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? So we have two wonderful things here. The first is that 49 babies, that there were 49 babies instead of 49 pieces of one baby. So that was the first wonderful thing. And the second wonderful thing is that these babies were Vaishnavas, because Diti's children generally are demons. In fact, the demons are called the Daityas, or the sons of Diti. So she generally doesn't have very good children. So one is thinking, you know, not only did they all live, but they became wonderful children. And Sukadeva Goswami is saying, even one time worshipping the Lord, even one time. Of course, the example of this is one time worshipping the Lord who went back to Godhead, Ajamin. We were there in Philadelphia in 75 when Prabhupada was speaking on the verse where Ajamil calls out at the end of his life, Narayanan. And he was still working on those, that book, and the devotee said, Ajamil called out, Narayanan, Narayanan, Narayanan. Prabhupada said, no, did I say three times? It's not necessary. Once is sufficient. Narayanan. So one time. Actually, Lord Ramachandra says, it's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that if one time a person comes to me with sincerity and asks me for courage, I will immediately give courage to such a person. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami quotes Lord Nrisimhadeva saying that if one time a person surrenders to me, from that day on they become my personal ward. So this, of course, is not limited to ISKCON or what to speak of even to Vaishnavas. It's anybody who goes and says, my dear Lord, from this day on I am yours. I surrender to you. I want to be your servant. With sincerity. Not just people who go to a church for a wedding. You know, not just like that. Not some official thing I'm putting in my Christmas day. You know, or people who in the name of religion are blowing up buildings. I mean, not that kind of surrender, but some genuine surrender. One time. Then perfection is guaranteed. It may take some time. It may not be the one becomes perfect in that very moment. But perfection is guaranteed. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in writing on initiation, says that it's extremely rare that once one takes initiation, one will not achieve perfection. He said there may be some, you know, glitches. I forget that he didn't use the word glitches. But there may be some difficulty on the path. You know, sometimes a river, when it flows to the sea, it flows underground for some time. So there may be some deviations, but once one takes initiation, there may be some very, very, very rare exceptions, extremely rare. But basically, once, because initiation is also saying, okay, Lord, I'm sold to you. I'm yours. You can do with me what you like. I'm your servant. I make that commitment. And Krishna doesn't forget it. You know, in modern society, you make a commitment, like people commit to get married, and well, now this has happened, that has happened, the other things happen. Forget that commitment. But Krishna doesn't forget. You make a commitment to him. He says, I'm holding you to this. You're not getting out. You know, I'm not gonna grant you a divorce. We're here to stay. So the point is that it's not surprising that Diti, who became very serious about worshiping Vishnu for a year, had great devotees as her children. And just see. Was she worshipping Vishnu for the purpose of pure devotional service? Was that her motive? What was her motive? She wanted to kill Indra, who's one of Krishna's devotees. Just see. So suppose somebody came here and said, you know, I want to kill Bhakti Michael. And they're so determined, they hate you so much, you know, that they're taking this extreme vow of devotional service for a year. And from that, they become so purified, they become a pure devotee and a pure devotee children. So, yeah, we talked a lot in this temple about seeing people as having good motives. But, my dear friends, even if people have terrible motives, if they're doing devotion, what kind of worse motive can you have than that? I mean, what's the worst motive then? I want to kill one of the devotees. How much worse can you get? And still, they'll become a devotee. Of course, while they're thinking they want to kill the devotees, you may not want to be their best friend. You may not want to sleep in the same room with them. They may pull out a knife in the middle of the night. But still, they'll become purified. They'll become purified. Now, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, in commenting on Karmadi Nirdhatikin Chitchabhakti Bhaja, says the way we become purified is through the... That's true, but he says through the fire of ordeal. He says the way the devotee becomes free from karma. Karma doesn't just mean parabdha karma. It doesn't just mean fully fructified karma for which we're now getting a broken leg or whatever, legal trouble, money trouble. Karma also means the desire to sin, the desire to do something separate from Krishna. So that's also going to be finished for the devotee through the fire of ordeal. So if someone's approaching Krishna with some very horrible desire, but they're approaching Krishna, that will be burned up through the fire of ordeal. Now that's true for us, and it's true for everybody else as well. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if someone one time chants Hare Krishna, you offer them all respect. Doesn't matter why they're chanting Hare Krishna. Even if they're chanting Hare Krishna to mock the devotees.
Oh, look at those stupid Hare Krishnas chanting Hare Krishna.
Even if they're chanting Hare Krishna is offensive, even if it's neglectful. And sometimes devotees also ask the question, you know, maybe my rounds are not so good, maybe I should give them up. No, even neglectful chanting is beneficial. Not that one should purposely be neglectful. But even neglectful, even offensive, eventually it will purify. Yes?
Yeah, that's extraordinary how, you know, even with ill motives, those motives can be purified. Tivarina Bhakti Yoga.
Yes.
Now, what about, I have had an experience with someone who joined the movement, and the motive was, although we didn't say it at the time, was just to avoid the drag. And the day, the very day, that Jimmy Carter pardoned everybody,
he left.
He left. And he did some heavy duty service for 7 years. I mean, he was also up and down and unsteady.
I wonder if we're thinking about the same person. But I knew somebody who joined the movement to get away from some legal implication.
Mm-hmm. And so.
And as soon as the period of amnesty was over, he was gone.
So, and then also, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also talked about if you're. If you're chanting Hare Krishna, but you're meditating on material desires, you're watering your wing instead of the creeper.
Mm.
So, how does that? I mean, it seems to be diametrically opposed. I believe what you said.
That you're watering the weed instead of the creeper. Well, it's just, the example the Prabhupada gives is if you're trying to light a fire with wet wood, first you have to dry out the wood. So, first your attempts to light a fire are just drying out the wood. And when you're drying out the wood, what is produced from your fire lighting attempts?
Smoke.
Now, if you're pouring water on the wood while you're trying to light a fire, it's going to take a very long time. But eventually it will be effective. I mean, this was a question asked actually right here in Hawaii. Where there were some people who were saying that if you just chant Hare Krishna, you don't have to follow the principles. And Prabhupada said, what is the meaning of the 10 kinds of offenses? He said, not only offenses is the worst offense. Of course, there's like 3 different offenses Prabhupada would say is the worst offense. To blaspheme the devotees, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, and to sin on the strength of chanting. Those 3 he would say are the worst offenses. So he said, not only offenses is the worst offense, to commit sin on the strength of chanting. And they said, Prabhupada, should these people stop chanting? He said, no. He said, eventually it will be effective. He said, but it may take 700 births. Specifically said 700 births. He said, so if you want to finish your business quickly, he said, because first you have to dry out the wood. So that's also there.
For the example I gave of this person, there's no loss in what he did, and he might just have to come back for many, many births. But
or it might fructify later. You know, think about Ajamila. Ajamila was performing devotional service when he was young. Mm-hmm. And he was already married. You know, we have to assume that those days people got married very young. But he was at least, let's say, 15, 16 at the time of his fall now. Maybe even he was in his 20s. So he had gone through his whole life of doing devotional service. And Krishna remembered that. And because Krishna remembered that, he inspired him from within his mind to name his child Narayana. And then he's doing unconscious devotional service. Narayana, please sit down. Narayana, take your meals. You know, he's always saying Narayana. Prabhupada says, if we remember our own name at the time of death, we go back to Godhead. Out of attachment to his son. So the Krishna, but then, you know, when the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas came, he didn't immediately go to the spiritual world. His devotional service had to mature. And they left him and allowed him to feel separation from the devotees. And in that mood of separation, he was completing his devotional service. He completed it in that life. I'm thinking of one of our godbrothers who was a Sankirtan leader in Chicago when I joined. And I saw him at Philadelphia Rath Yatra maybe at least 15 years ago, maybe a little more. We're in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. We're in Washington, D.C. Rath Yatra. And my husband and I were sitting down after the parade, and he walks up to me and he says, are you Bhaktin Edie? Obviously, I'm going to stop here at this verse. We'll do the rest of it. And I said, well, I haven't been Bhaktin Edie for a long time. And he said, well, I'm so-and-so. I used to be your Sankirtan leader. I'm like, wow. I said, so what's happened? He said, well, you know, my wife got cancer, and we ended up leaving the movement. And then she left me. He said, I gave up my practice of Krishna consciousness. I married a non-devotee woman. We had three children. He said, I gave up everything to do with Krishna. He said, I even went to eating meat. He said, I didn't want anything to remind me of Krishna ever. And I was living in that way, raised my children. He said, then I started having these dreams that I was dying. He said, for 1 week, every night, I dreamed I was dying in some different way. I was being poisoned. I was falling off a cliff. Somebody was stabbing me. He said, every night I'd wake up in the middle of the night, sweating, shaking. And after 7 nights of these dreams, he said, I had a dream where Prabhupada came to me and said, come back, come back, come back. I think what I was remembering, he had gone to the Philadelphia temple to do some service. Who knows how we've seen so many people who've left the movement and engaged sometimes in horrendous activities. And with many of them, Krishna's called them back.
So it's, again, my question, I'm just seeing a little piece of time, but we have to take the bigger picture.
That's right. Yeah. Burajampu makes the point that from Lord Brahma's perspective, one of our lifetimes lost 8 billionths of a second. So, you know, we really think in terms of one life, or we think in terms of 10 years. But it's not like that. You know, it's something, we're looking at this little piece, and our perspective is very distorted. Krishna has a completely different perspective. What's really nice about Krishna, as compared to most conditioned souls, is how significant he considers a very small bit of service. So if there's an ocean of fault and sin, and Krishna just sees the service. Whereas we tend to do the opposite. So a person can, you know, do nice things for me for 10 years, and if one day they insult me, I just remember that insult. It's incredible. Oh, okay, now I can't have anything to do with you. Now I can't trust you anymore. Now you're not my friend anymore. You know, and it's, you see it over and over again, that we have, most of us have that tendency. That it just doesn't matter how much someone has done for us and how wonderful they've been. As soon as they have one fault, then we reject them. Krishna is exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. He sees the goodness. I mean, what goodness is there in what Diti's doing? What possible good thing is Krishna finding in it? We would look at it and say, it's all completely contaminated. And he's seeing some good. He's seeing good just in the behavior, even though the behavior is ill-motivated. I mean, he saw good in Putana. This is when Pundarika Virginity heard that verse, he immediately went into ecstasy. That this is how wonderful Krishna is. And then we're afraid to surrender to him. You know, we're afraid that if I surrender to Krishna, he's not going to treat me nicely. When Krishna gives liberation to people who try to kill him. That's how forgiving he is. That's how kind he is.
Because we constantly project our junk onto Krishna.
Yes. We think that Krishna is as nasty as I. All right, so tomorrow we're going to look at truthfulness. How truthful that Diti and Indra were to each other.